once we get to the Q&A part of the call. Also, this call is being recorded, just so that you all know. And I now have the pleasure of turning the program over to MMTC's President and CEO, Marita Coley.
Thank you, Darissa Griffin. Hi, I'm pleased to welcome everyone to our Spectrum Deep Dive Part 2. Some of you may have been around February 19th. It seems like a different world a few weeks ago when we had our Deep Dive Part 1. And now we're pleased to bring to you Part 2, which is convened by our Vice President of Telecommunications and All Things Spectrum, Dr. Ricken Thacker. Ricken is our lead content developer on our telecommunications apprenticeship contract with the National Urban League and the U.S. Department of Labor for the purposes of bringing telecommunications training and apprenticeships to a diverse group of people in 12 of the NUL's affiliates around the country. He also is our lead developer on all things spectrum and infrastructure, broadband infrastructure, and on bridging the digital divide. So I would like to turn it over to Ricken now to run the program.
Okay. Thanks, Marita. Welcome, everyone. Thank you all for joining in our virtual teleconference here, virtual meeting, if you will. Before we go into introducing our wonderful panel and awesome speakers, I just want to mention that, you know, why we care about this topic. We believe it's important to facilitate the deployment of both wired and wireless infrastructure to all communities equally, regardless of the income, race, and geography. We are also aware at MMTC that year 2018 was the year for streamlining regulations around small cells deployment. We previously supported streamlined regulations to promote wireless and wired deployment of infrastructure. We also know that 2018 was the year of spectrum, particularly for millimeter wave bands. And then this year in 2020, FCC's focus is shifting to mid-band spectrum. Today we support universal non-discriminatory rollout and making more licensed and unlicensed spectrum available, mainly to help bridge the digital divide and create opportunities for everyone. And there must be a laser-like focus, as we believe in, particularly on how to reach communities, whether urban or rural. And especially now, as we know, with the growing concerns around coronavirus, lots of workplaces are closing. More and more people are encouraged to work from home. And as Espen mentioned yesterday, we are actually getting into this world's largest work from home experience. And with all the school closures, universities moving to online classes, we are going to actually put our broadband connectivity, Wi-Fi's unlicensed spectrum, cellular's license band, everything to this ultimate test. So as we know that spectrum is actually varied bands, and I'm just actually giving a quick primer on what we covered in part one. So we went through different types of bands, and as we know that low bands travel further, they are more desirable for coverage. High bands on the other side, the propagation limits are there, and they are mainly good for higher capacity. But mid bands, they sit in the middle. They are Goldilocks bands, if you will, and when you ask about mid-band, different literature actually would say that the start and end of this band actually would vary. But for the purpose of this discussion or today's discussion, we are going to actually assume mid-band ranging from 2.5 gigahertz to 6 gigahertz. And we know that why we call them Goldilocks bands, because they are actually right in the middle. They have a good combination of coverage and capacity parameters. So we did this high-level overview of different bands during our first briefing a few weeks ago, and today we are going to actually review where these bands are located right now at the FCC's desk, and we have invited these amazing experts from different domains to discuss the current proceedings at the FCC, and mainly what it means for all of us. So let me introduce our speakers today. We have Patrick McFerrin from National Association of Broadcasters, NAB. We have Jan Oberhausen from CTIA, the Wireless Association. We have Clint Oram from National Urban League, NUL. And we have Danielle Penrith from NCTA, the Internet and Television Association. So welcome, everyone. I want to remind again, as Dorisa mentioned, all the participants are muted. Please note down your questions and definitely raise your hand through the instructions provided earlier. And towards the end of this call, we will actually open the lines and we'll actually have your questions and our experts will be able to answer that. So I want to actually request our participants right now, each panelist, please spend a couple of minutes to introduce yourself and speak about your organization's mission and mainly how availability of more spectrum and related policy issues actually matter to your organization. So Patrick, do you want to go first, please?
Sure. So again, I'm Patrick McFadden, Associate General Counsel at the National Association of Broadcasters. And broadcasters use spectrum in more ways than people might ordinarily think. Obviously, we use television band spectrum and radio band spectrum to broadcast free over-the-air signals from our primary facilities. But broadcasters also use spectrum in other ways, both to produce and distribute content and to receive content. And so as we think about the Federal Communications Commission's efforts to make more spectrum available, we're certainly supportive of that. But our focus is on making sure that as new users are allowed into existing bands that already have users, those incumbent users are either accommodated or there are sufficient protections put in place to make sure that everybody can coexist peacefully so that we don't wind up sort of in a tragedy of the commons where we undermine the value of any particular band for anyone. So, you know, a couple bands that I think we're going to talk about in more detail include the C-band and the 6 gigahertz band, which are obviously very important to broadcasters and where we have significant concerns and issues. But we're always hopeful that we can work together with the commission and other stakeholders to make sure that we can both allow expanded access for other uses of spectrum while protecting existing uses.
Okay, great, wonderful, thanks. Jen?
Hi there, thanks. Jen Oberhausen with CTIA in Regulatory Affairs. And just some background on CTIA, we represent the entire wireless ecosystem. We have in excess of 250 members, and that ranges from, you know, the smartphone manufacturers, the service providers, chip makers, app developers, and infrastructure providers. And all told, we represent an industry that brings in roughly $475 billion to the U.S. economy, and contributes more to the economy than other key industries like publishing, agriculture, and motion pictures, just for some context there. So in terms of how we use spectrum, I think, you know, everyone is familiar with how we're using our mobile phones. We go through different iterations of that technology about once every decade. It's likely that right now we're all mostly still using 4G LTE and are on the cusp of the 5G revolution here in the U.S. So the U.S. led in 4G, and what we mean by that is the first smartphone was developed here in the United States. We had the first 4G LTE networks here in the United States, and that meant that, you know, the entire app industry and everything that rides on top of those smartphone connections was also here, and that leads to us supporting 4.7 million American jobs because of that. So we want to make sure that is the case for 5G as well, so that everything that rides on top of our 5G networks, you know, lives here in the United States and drives that job creation and value creation here in the U.S. again. And then on the kind of user end of things, we know that reliance on wireless connections is increasing, and that is even more true among minority communities. So mobile devices are not simply being used more often to go online. Some Americans we know are foregoing those traditional home broadband connections altogether in favor of just using their smartphones. So while the overall population smartphone ownership is at 90%, that number is higher in minority communities. We're seeing roughly 96% of Asian American households own smartphones, 95% of Hispanic households, and 92% of African American households own smartphones. And in terms of reliance on those smartphone connections for the internet, we see similar increases among minority communities there. So while about 20% of all Americans are smartphone-only broadband subscribers, that number is 24% among African Americans and 35% among Hispanics. And those stats are from the Pew Research Center and Nielsen. So that's something we always keep track of in terms of the extent to which we see consumers relying on that smartphone use. And then in terms of what we're going to talk about today on mid-band, I mentioned we're on the cusp of moving to 5G, and we hear a lot about that. We're going to see networks that are 100 times faster, 100 times more devices, and 5 times as responsive, you know, the real-time applications compared to what we're seeing with 4G. And that will lead to benefits for our economy, and it's estimated an additional 3 million new jobs. So that's what we're focused on is making sure that we get the next generation of wireless into the hands of U.S. consumers. And those deployments for 5G are, you know, rolling out right now. We saw in excess of 90 5G deployments in the U.S. with one provider launching 5G covering 200 million people at the end of 2019. So we're starting to see those devices roll out, and, you know, we'll getting that 5G into the hands of everyone very soon. So appreciate you walking us through, again, the importance of low, mid, and high band spectrum. We agree that the mid-band spectrum is really the sweet spot for us on 5G because it offers that combination of coverage and capacity. And we're focused on making sure that 2020 is the year of mid-band execution here in the U.S., specifically because of the importance of those airwaves. So you know, happy to talk a little bit more about the specific bands a little later on.
Absolutely. Propagation point of view, I did mention about the mid-band and why it's called Goldilocks, but at the same time, I also want to add to that that the existing two bands of Wi-Fi unlicensed spectrum also fall into the mid-band, and we're going to have some discussion around that, particularly with respect to 6 and 5.9 soon. Clint.
Yes, thank you for inviting us. The National Urban League, for those of you who may not know, is this year celebrating its 110th year anniversary. We are an organization whose mission is to enable African Americans and other underserved urban residents to secure economic self-reliance, parity, power, and civil rights. We've had a long history of working in this field. Emerging, what used to be an emerging field of broadband, to make sure that persistent gaps that we see in wealth, in home ownership, and other metrics don't replicate or become exacerbated in broadband adoption. We've heard some great statistics today on broadband usage, the flavors and the kinds of broadband varieties that African Americans and other minority groups use in the United States, and I won't add to the number crunch just yet, but suffice it to say that we're interested in this discussion because whether we're talking about licensed uses or unlicensed uses, broadband access and the price point at which our community can access these services is really the key. And although, you know, I served for many years at the FCC in the Wireless Bureau and as a wireless advisor, the starkness of the day in which we find ourselves, where the World Health Organization has declared a pandemic, and what the consequences of that are for for our communities when that means kids are going to be at home, presumably doing distance learning, or people are going to be working remotely, the availability and the affordability of broadband becomes the issue of the day. Not so much whether 1,200 megahertz of spectrum should be reserved for unlicensed use or some smaller amount, but what does the crisis mean for our communities? In my own personal home, I have one telecommuting adult, two college students who are back at home because their colleges are now closed for in-person classes, and just waiting for the shoe to drop on the Fairfax public school system. So this is not an abstraction for me. It's not an abstraction for many of the 40-some million African Americans in this country. This is a very real issue, and I look forward to talking more about how we can help get broadband to our communities and make it affordable.
Great. Thanks, Glenn.
Hi. Thanks so much, Rickon and MMTC, for inviting me to participate in the panel today. I'm a vice president and associate general counsel at NCTA, the Internet and Television Association, and I work primarily on spectrum policy issues for the cable industry. NCTA's members are both cable operators and broadband providers like Comcast and Charter and Cox, as well as content companies like Disney and Fox and Discovery. So we're involved in spectrum issues in sort of a variety of ways among these different member groups. Our members rely heavily on spectrum to deliver services to customers, so we're very active at the FCC on these issues. On the broadband provider side, unlicensed spectrum is a critical input to broadband services like Wi-Fi, and because most cable broadband customers experience their internet connection over their Wi-Fi device, it's really important to our members that the Wi-Fi that they're able to offer keeps pace with the wired services that they're able to deliver into homes and businesses across the country. Some of our members are also deploying or exploring fixed wireless internet access, where the broadband connection comes into the home through a wireless device rather than a fiber or coaxial cable, which can be a really, I think, good tool for extending broadband access into underserved areas. On the television side, our members use spectrum when they produce and deliver television content, and Patrick gave a good overview of how that works in the broadcast space. I think in our case, services are fairly similar. C-band satellite operations are important for content companies to deliver television programming to the cable operators who then distribute out that television content to all of you when you watch your TV. And content companies also use other spectrum to send breaking news and sports and events content from out in the field back to production centers. So all of those uses of spectrum, I think, are really important for NCTA's members. There are a few spectrum bands that are of particular interest to NCTA. I think we'll talk about these in further detail as we can explore some of these topics in questions. But, you know, I think on the Wi-Fi side, you know, there's sort of a real need for additional unlicensed mid-band spectrum. Jen highlighted the importance of unlicensed airwaves for 5G. And, you know, certainly I think a balanced spectrum policy is important that preserves access and makes enough spectrum available for both licensed and unlicensed uses. On the unlicensed side, there's really been no new mid-band unlicensed spectrum that's suitable for Wi-Fi made available by the FCC since before the iPhone was introduced. And obviously, data consumption and the way that we use our devices has changed really substantially. There's really been a revolution since then. Wi-Fi today carries over half of internet traffic, and it's expected that Wi-Fi will be critical in terms of offload of mobile services like 5G. Cisco predicts that more than 70% of 5G traffic will be offloaded to Wi-Fi in the next few years. So I think we're really facing a Wi-Fi spectrum crunch where we'll need more Wi-Fi, more unlicensed mid-band spectrum in order to meet the speed and capacity requirements both for next generation Wi-Fi deployments as well as for to help meet those requirements in the 5G space. So, at the same time, we have important incumbent operations in some of these bands that require protection and look forward to exploring those topics in further detail.
Great, thank you. And I think let me jump straight on 6 gigahertz here, because you mentioned about Wi-Fi and Clint mentioned 1200 numbers. So we can actually discuss that first, if I may. So I mentioned there are two more bands already assigned on Wi-Fi, and they were assigned years ago, probably decades ago here. The first one is 2.4 gigahertz, which was ISM band, and then 5 gigahertz, as commonly known as UNII. But the one we are talking about, the 1200 number, I think we need to explore that here. And that is referring to 6 gigahertz. And to be very specific, it's 5.925 to 7.125, right? So there is this 1200 megahertz, and it's a large chunk, a big chunk, 1200 megahertz of band. And Danielle, if I just start with you, I know you already mentioned about this, but can you walk us through where we are at the FCC and what FCC mentioned last about this band, and why do you think opening up this 6 gigahertz band, 1200 megahertz for unlicensed, and why that is actually important?
Sure. Yeah, thank you. So at the FCC, the standard has been under discussion, I think, since way back in 2017 when there was a notice of inquiry where the FCC asked some questions about mid-band spectrum, and then it followed on with a notice of proposed rulemaking. Comments and reply comments have been in, and there's been a fairly long ex parte engagement period where folks have been filing letters at the commission, and including many technical studies looking at the possibilities for how new unlicensed users can coexist with existing operations in the band. I think the FCC is poised to move forward very soon with an order on this band. I think there's still some discussions around the edges about kind of how unlicensed devices can protect existing users, but NCTA is optimistic about those prospects. We are interestingly positioned here on this one, in that we have obviously members who are very interested in additional spectrum for our Wi-Fi uses. But our content company members also have important operations in this band that need to be protected. These are those television, largely the television content production, but also some distribution operations with C-band uplink here. As far as the production operations, we're talking about electronic news gathering, mobile news trucks, camera back transmitters, and other operations critical to the coverage of live sports and events. So, I think the FCC, again, is poised to move forward fairly soon. They'll look at how to protect those existing incumbent operations while enabling robust Wi-Fi access to the band. From our perspective, it's critical that the commission move forward with low-power indoor Wi-Fi throughout all 1,200 megahertz of the band. It does seem like a very large swath of spectrum, but when you think about all the robust internet connectivity that Wi-Fi enables and will enable over the coming years, I think it's really critical that the commission move forward with all those 1,200 megahertz. Again, there's been no new unlicensed mid-band spectrum since 2003, which is the last time the FCC opened up a part of the 5 gigahertz band. And since that time, we've really seen skyrocketing demand on the consumer side. You know, every year the Cisco statistics show us that more and more internet traffic is traveling over Wi-Fi, and it's a very important on-ramp to connectivity, especially for unserved and underserved communities. There was a study back a few years by John Horrigan, with whom many of you may be familiar, demonstrating that Wi-Fi is of particular importance for African American and Latino communities, who are more likely to use Wi-Fi in public places than some others, and in particular for education, for job searches, and for entertainment. And so we really think that as reliance on Wi-Fi accelerates, you know, throughout the population, and, you know, including as more folks here in the immediate near term are telecommuting and doing distance learning, we think unlicensed technologies will be a disproportionately powerful tool for some of these minority communities. So, we think it's really important that the FCC move forward to enable unlicensed access throughout the band while protecting incumbent operations. I know there have been some proposals to, as Jen may discuss, to license a portion of the band. We think that there are other opportunities in the mid-band for licensed use, including the 3.5 band that will be auctioned this year, which we may discuss, and the C-band 280 megahertz of C-band spectrum that's likely to be auctioned by the end of December. But this is really, I think, you know, apart from the 5.9 gigahertz band, which is a much smaller piece of bandwidth, really the future home for Wi-Fi, both today and into the future. Just briefly, kind of about Wi-Fi 6 and what this band would enable. The Wi-Fi community has brought online a new Wi-Fi standard called Wi-Fi 6 that relies on really wide bandwidth channels of 160 megahertz. And we don't really have any contiguous 160 megahertz channels available in the Wi-Fi bands today. So to really get the full benefit of the speeds that Wi-Fi 6 can enable, we need access to additional contiguous unlicensed spectrum bands. And 6 gigahertz is really the place to do that, which could bring online 7 new 160 megahertz Wi-Fi channels. And I think, you know, our members are thinking about this not just as, you know, Wi-Fi 6 and enabling, you know, this next generation of Wi-Fi technology that's here today, but also the next generations of Wi-Fi technology, Wi-Fi 7 and beyond. It may rely on 320 megahertz channels for things like AR and VR and some of these very bandwidth-heavy applications. So, with that, I'll conclude, but just note again our support for unlicensed throughout the band, acknowledging the need to protect incumbent operations and optimistic about the possibilities for coexistence.
Okay, great. Fantastic. So, Jen, I think from CTI point of view, I know you mentioned CTI has been supportive of unlicensed use, but I believe there is a different view here, and CTI is asking Commission to hit pause on the upper portion of the band. Can you tell us the thinking behind that?
Yeah, thanks, Rickon. So you're right. We support, just broadly, we support both unlicensed and licensed spectrum use. And, you know, we also agree that it's important that we move forward in the next generation of Wi-Fi and agree that we need unlicensed access in the 6 gigahertz band. But this band provides a unique opportunity given that it is, you know, a full 1,200 megahertz of spectrum that we're talking about. So we think it's a great opportunity to enable new unlicensed and licensed services. That's a lot of spectrum. And by introducing unlicensed operations into just that lower 5 or 600 megahertz of the band, the Commission will roughly double the amount of mid-band spectrum available today for unlicensed use, and that's a huge win. So, and we've seen the unlicensed community celebrate other countries that have done exactly that to propose unlicensed use in the lower roughly 500 megahertz of that band. But you're right, in terms of the upper portion of the band, we have asked the FCC to hit pause on moving forward there so that the FCC can fully consider all of the options on the table, can take stock of how the market develops for Wi-Fi, and how things proceed in terms of the other bands that are on the table, and how 5G develops going forward too. So we'd like the FCC to move forward quickly on the lower portion, but not to adopt rules for the full 1,200, just to preserve its options there. And while we're talking about this, you know, the other important component here is, Danielle mentioned that there are very important incumbents in the band, and that includes telecommunications networks that use the 6 gigahertz band today for carrying wireless traffic back into the core network. Also, utilities use it, public safety, and then I'm sure we'll hear from Patrick on how broadcasters use the spectrum as well. So we're also focused on ensuring that any new unlicensed operations do fully protect those incumbents that are in the band. So we're engaging pretty heavily with FCC on the technical fronts there to ensure that there's a robust interference protection mechanism in place to ensure that any interference that does occur can be put to a stop immediately and hopefully be prevented in the first place. And, you know, we're focused on working on that mechanism to make sure it's simple and easy to implement and is based on the information about those incumbents that's already available in Commission databases there. I can pause there. I do want to make sure we talk about a little bit sort of the amount of spectrum, mid-band spectrum, that the U.S. is looking at for licensed use versus unlicensed. So I think we'll probably talk a little bit later about C-band if we have time to fully dive into that. But as you mentioned, Rickon, in February, the commission did move forward announcing that there will be an auction in the 3.5 gigahertz band starting in June and adopting an order that will make 280 megahertz of spectrum available for licensed use in 3.7 to 3.98 gigahertz. And that's really important because, you know, as I mentioned, we're focused on making sure that mid-band spectrum is available. Here in the United States today, we don't have any spectrum available between 3 and 7 gigahertz for licensed use. By the end of 2020, we're looking at that 70 megahertz in the 3.5 gigahertz band. But what we're seeing in the rest of the United States and the rest of the world is that by the end of 2020, Japan will have 800 megahertz of mid-band spectrum. South Korea already has 280 megahertz available, and China already has 460 megahertz available. But those countries aren't sitting still. They are moving forward. So we also need to be looking to make more available. Japan is planning to assign another 200 megahertz of mid-band spectrum. South Korea is planning to add another 320, and China is looking at hundreds more. So we need to keep taking stock of all of those developments and make sure that we're not putting the U.S. as an outlier there.
Mm-hmm. No, appreciate that. And for our audience here, I know we are talking about different bands here, and with the time permitting, we will talk about C-band and CBRS. I don't mind doing part three in future, but we want to address all mid-band today if possible. But there are CBRS band, which is 3.5, C-band, which is, as we know, FCC voted on that last month. We are talking about 6 gigahertz right now, and then there is 5.9. So there are four different bands from MMTC's point of view we are observing. So right now, again, we are talking about 6 gigahertz. But I want to go to Patrick here because we are talking about the incumbents and protecting them. And also we talk about two views here. We have full 1200 for unlicensed use, and then we talk about, you know, maybe doing half 600 for unlicensed, 6 for 5G license use. Patrick, I believe there is a different number here, I guess, 500 and 700. So can you walk us through that and why broadcasters value this band?
Sure. So thanks. And Danielle alluded to this a little bit. Broadcasters primarily have two kinds of uses in the 6 gigahertz band. We have fixed links, which a lot of other kinds of users have in this band. And in our case, those are primarily studio-to-transmitter links where we think it certainly is very plausible to allow unlicensed as long as there's frequency coordination to ensure that there's no interference to those links. One of the more challenging problems in this proceeding, from our perspective, is our mobile operations, and Danielle alluded to this a little bit. Broadcasters use 6 gigahertz spectrum for mobile news gathering, and that can take the form of both camera-back transmitters as well as news trucks that go out to breaking news events and then need to relay coverage back to the studio. And we're a little bit concerned about how those kinds of operations can be protected in a couple of ways. First, it's difficult to do frequency coordination with them because we don't always know where news is going to break. But then also some of the proposals in the record to just allow very low power indoor operations in the hope that that will not interfere with our mobile news gathering operations. Frankly, we think those proposals are inadequate, both because sometimes news gathering operations, especially portable camera use, actually does take place indoors, so an indoor restriction doesn't do us a lot of good. But also, frankly, we're not 100% convinced that indoor operations can be kept indoors. So as we look at this proceeding, you know, one of the things that I think should be apparent is that 1200 megahertz is an awful lot of spectrum, and I understand the interest in getting unlicensed access to the entire band, At this point, we think the Commission has a great opportunity to make, you know, hundreds of megahertz available while saving some of the more difficult problems that could probably benefit from additional study. So we would support making the lower 500 megahertz of the band available now and having the Commission move forward with a further notice that would seek further comment on how to address the remaining 700 megahertz, including how to protect incumbent mobile operations. And then that, I guess, could also include questions about whether or not it would be appropriate to license a portion of the band. We have not taken a position on licensing a portion of the upper part of the band, but, you know, I'll sort of just pause there to note that while we haven't taken a position on that, it is certainly true that, you know, Jen and myself and dozens of other people around town spent the last 2.5 years of our life trying to figure out how to reorganize a portion of the C-band to provide access to 280 megahertz of mid-band spectrum for mobile carriers because we were in a race to 5G, and now we're talking about giving away access to 1,200 megahertz of mid-band spectrum to some of the wealthiest companies in the world, which seems like that might be something that would warrant a little further inquiry. So I'll stop there. I'm sure Clint and others have thoughts on this as well.
Yeah, and thank you. And I was going to go to Clint here. That Clint, you've been an 8th floor advisor, wireless advisor. You're a Senate staffer and now a civil rights advocate. And all these technical parameters discussed here on license versus unlicensed. What's your view here? How do we sort out this spectrum issue, particularly for 6 gigahertz here?
Sure. Well, as I said at the top of our remarks, I'm really focused in this job, as I have in every other job that you've mentioned, on how do we get broadband to the people who don't have access to it from a physical availability of infrastructure, and how do we get access to people who are challenged in buying the service. And whether we're talking about licensed or unlicensed spectrum, there has to be someone in this equation paying for internet access. And so, you know, unlicensed access or licensed access is really all about how do you get to broadband, and somebody has to pay for that broadband. What I'd really like to see a little bit more of in this discussion is what are some of the use cases and what are some of the price points for these use cases. You know, I was at the commission when the Part 15 rules were being developed, and I can tell you that the debates that went on back then were pretty funny to listen to in today's context. Our greatest ambition was being able to connect your computer to your printer without the rat's nest of wires connecting them. We've seen tremendous advances in innovation in unlicensed wireless use, and I applaud, you know, the industry for all of the great innovation. But the challenge that industry now faces is kind of what can you do now to advance broadband adoption in communities that really need it. Take, for instance, the decennial census. We are embarking upon the decennial census right now, a process that's going to determine where $1.5 trillion of federal resources are going to be deployed. In order to make sure that count is accurate, for the first year, we're going to have online option for people who want to fill out the census form. So for in places like the Black Belt, the so-called Black Belt, where about 80% of African Americans live outside of urban areas, this is a severe challenge in making sure that those folks have access to broadband, to say nothing of its affordability, in order to fill out the census form. Take a look at the crisis that we're now in with the coronavirus. Will the licensed operators or the unlicensed proponents be able to figure out a use case solution to make sure that folks have access to be able to do homework, to be able to apply for jobs. And increasingly, as you know, computer access is instrumental in actually interviewing for a job. So this is a brave new world that we're entering into, and the abstractions of whether we use 1200 megahertz or something less than 1200 is really not something that communities of color and people who are having trouble affording broadband are really focused on. They're really focused on who can get a solution to me fastest and who can provide a solution that's affordable. I've seen some interesting use cases in the 5G context where you could actually provide a competitive product and potentially even at a lower price than wired broadband in the home. I don't know how fast that can be scaled. I don't know how sustainable that pricing model is, but I'd like to see more of that. And on the unlicensed side, I'd like to see more of a use case there in remote places, in rural Georgia, rural Alabama, rural Louisiana, where I'm from, to see how can we use unlicensed spectrum to reach those folks and at a price point that's sensible. I'm going to drop off here and go on to mute.
Okay. No, thanks, Clint. I mean, as you know, we share some common interests here, and our focus here at the MMTC also lies in the same, at how this discussion actually matters to communities of color. But if I may ask one more question to you, Clint, before you go on mute there one more time. But do you think Congress has any play here in sorting this issue with respect to 60 yards or spectrum in general?
Congress has always watched these spectrum debates with great interest, whether it be for creating a nationwide interoperable public safety network or even creating a personal communication service as it did in the 90s. Congress, if Congress sees a revenue opportunity, especially at a time where revenues are in great demand, it often takes that opportunity. If Congress were to override, I would say, the policymakers at the FCC and push in a direction that is not where the FCC is currently going, instead of watching those revenues go to the General Treasury, it would be very interesting to see if we could develop some directed funds that go to broadband adoption, broadband literacy, broadband affordability. Those would be very interesting to me and to our communities. But short of that, as somebody who's been around this industry for 30 years, the commission generally does a good job in these spectrum fights and drawing the right lines. And unless Congress is prepared to override what the FCC is planning to do, there may not be a role for Congress here other than raising revenues. And unless those revenues are targeted to places where that can really use it, I'm not sure there's a great role for Congress in this mid-band discussion.
This is Jen. If I could jump in on that. We've seen some estimates that auctioning 600 megahertz in the 6 gigahertz band could bring in more than $22 billion to the U.S. Treasury. And so we also took a look at how much it would cost to potentially relocate those incumbents out of there. And we filed that with the FCC, and that those relocation costs are really a fraction of that amount, just somewhere around $3 billion. So we think there's a huge opportunity there for Congress to jump in and fund exactly some of those things that that you were mentioning there. So, we could think creatively and fund some of those national priorities like rural build out and upgrading our nation's 911 networks, for example. So, that opportunity would be lost if the full 6 gigahertz band is given away for free for unlicensed use right now. So that's why we think it's really important for the commission to hit pause there and fully take stock of all of those things and give Congress time to consider that.
Okay. Well, I'd like to actually ask Danielle this question and give her opportunity to speak, particularly, you know, with respect to what's going on internationally on 6 gigahertz. And I'm very aware of the time here, but we heard that, you know, this upper portion of 6 gigahertz probably might be aligned more for licenses in some of the countries, but then like to understand from your point of view, Danielle.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. And before I turn to international harmonization, I want to just respond briefly to some of the comments made by the other panelists today. I think in considering whether or not to delay access to this critical mid-band spectrum resource, you know, for the FCC to consider further comments, and then ultimately really what's being discussed is to relocate incumbent users out of the band, try to move them to a government band, which could take over a decade. You know, I think we all agree that there's a pressing need for more mid-band spectrum for wireless broadband, and I'd hate to see access to the band, you know, and access by individual consumers to new 6 gigahertz enabled wireless devices delayed unless there's, you know, a real plan in place to see about how the band could be cleared and auctioned. And, you know, I think that what CTA has proposed so far, I think, falls a little short in terms of how licensed use might even be enabled in those upper frequencies. You know, as I understand it, the plan is to disrupt and relocate all of these existing incumbent users in the band and move them to a federal spectrum band that's next door, that's used for classified DoD operations and that hasn't been looked at yet as to whether or not it could really accommodate shared use. So I think that's one big hurdle. In addition, the CTA study that Jen referenced, I think, doesn't consider some important use cases, including the mobile news truck and camera back transmitter scenarios that Patrick had mentioned. Now, these are important use cases, and they're not considered either in the relocation cost estimates or, I think, really in terms of how they might share with the fixed government users that exist in the band that's proposed for sharing today. So I think there are a lot of obstacles yet to CTA's proposal, and I think it's not fully formed. So, again, I'd hate to see the FCC delay access to this important mid-band resource while all of those issues are worked out potentially, and when, you know, really we could be delivering Wi-Fi 6, 6E, which enables 6 gigahertz, should be enabled in equipment this year. So I think it's really a choice between enabling new wireless broadband access to, you know, communities across the country now, this year, versus, you know, delaying potentially a decade to pursue some of these other possibilities that would, in addition, be disruptive to incumbent operations. In terms of international harmonization, I think there are some exciting things going on internationally here at 6 gigahertz. The European Union and UVCOM in the UK are looking at unlicensed access to the lower part of the band. You know, we're hopeful that they'll consider unlicensed access in the upper portion of the band in the next few years as well, and that the FCC, I think, really has an opportunity to lead the world in terms of unlicensed access to these frequencies. I know there's been some discussion about some study items at the ITU on international harmonization on licensed use, but really these studies are fairly limited, both in terms of frequency and in scope. In terms of the scope of the items, it's fairly inconsistent with what I think CTA is proposing to do here in the U.S. Internationally, these bands are being looked at, the upper frequencies of 6 gigahertz are being studied really for shared license use, like 5G new radio unlicensed would be able to share in the unlicensed bands should the FCC move forward at 6 gigahertz. As far as I understand it, there's really no international study item on the table that would, you know, require clearing or auction of the spectrum for exclusive mobile use. So, again, we're hopeful that the FCC will lead the way this year on unlicensed access to all of these frequencies while protecting incumbent users, and that the world will follow and make this the next home for unlicensed, as 5 gigahertz has been up to this point.
Okay, great. Thanks, Danielle.
Jen, could I respond on the international front?
Quickly, please,
So I was in Egypt at the World Radio Conference for a month at the end of 2019 and was part of those discussions where the study items were teed up. And we did see proposals coming in from all across the world to study the 6 gigahertz band for 5G, with many countries noting that, you know, this is the next tranche of spectrum that is important to look at in this range, starting at 6 gigahertz and moving up from there. And so, you know, we do have a worldwide item where on a global basis, we're looking at the top 100 megahertz at the ITU. And in Europe, Africa, the Middle East, and Russia, they're looking at the full upper half of the band there. But it's also important to note that while on an international basis in this body, they're studying it for 5G, this band already has an existing, what's called a mobile allocation. So it already has the international treaty designation to be used for mobile use. So we don't need the international community to do anything there to move forward with 5G. So while there are some efforts to drive that harmonization, you know, nothing there is limiting that. Sorry,
right. No, I mean, and clearly we can see here, you know, we have different opinions here and agree that this is a very important band, both for licensed and unlicensed use. But at the same time, you know, for international harmonization point of view, I mean, many of our millimeter wave bands were released as well for 5G, and many other countries were not actually using it. So I'm not actually making an argument against anything. I'm just mentioning that, you know, this piece we are monitoring closely as well and wanted to understand this. And looking at the time here, Dorisa, do we have questions from participants? I think this is a good time to, of course, open the line. And if you have a question, I think you can raise your hand by doing what? 5-star, I believe?
Yes, that's correct, Rick. And for those that are on the call, if you have a question, please press 5 and then the symbol star on your phone. And what will happen is we'll be able to see that you have your virtual hand raised, and we will be able to acknowledge you and open the line for you to ask your question, and then turn it back over to Rick. And so if you have a question, please feel free to press 5-star on your keypad. And we'll be able to answer your question. Right now, I don't see any hands raised just yet, so just give people a second.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. And while we're waiting, I must say, I mean, I really wanted to do this panel and in person. Of course, you can see we have great speakers here, and of course, with the growing circumstances, we had to do this virtual, but this thought did cross my mind that, you know, we would not be able to cover all the bands, and maybe we should have called this briefing just 6 hours briefing. I guess there are no questions.
This is Sarissa. Hold on just a second. Let's let you finish speaking first again. We do have two questions. One from my CEO, Marita Coley, and then one from Tom Strobel. I think it's best to start with Tom. So, Tom, Marcella will unmute your line, and you are open now to ask your question.
Great. Thank you. Can you guys hear me? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Great discussion so far. Appreciate all the insight. I guess I have one question. So I see, I guess, a lot of parallels between the 6 gigahertz proceeding and the 3.5 proceeding, which obviously there's different incumbents, but in 3.5, we're able to basically protect the incumbents with a sort of SaaS database system, allow some of, or I guess all of it to be accessed on an unlicensed opportunistic basis, but also the upper half to be licensed. And obviously the SaaS system in 3.5 is different than the AFC system proposed for 6, and obviously there's also different incumbents in terms of federal, non-federal, and the use cases, but I'm just curious whether there is a potential, you know, from an engineering perspective, I guess, to have a similar system for the 6 gigahertz band where the incumbents are all protected through this system. There is opportunistic unlicensed access throughout the band, but also licensed potentially in the upper portion, you know, some upper portion of the band.
So this is Jen here. Not sure if I fully understand what you're asking, Tom, but in terms of what we think is necessary to protect those existing incumbents in the 6 gigahertz band to the extent unlicensed is allowed in there, yeah, we think it's very easy to have that type of system. It doesn't need to be as complex as what we have in the 3.5 gigahertz band because, or at least to the extent those operations are fixed, you know, we can. It's more of a simple database that just needs to tell an access point, you know, yes or no for a particular channel. So we do think that a lot of that work that has already been done can be leveraged, but that it's a lot simpler solution. Is that addressing your question, or was there another layer to it there?
Well, I mean, that is responsive. I guess maybe one potential tweak or follow-up, if it is, you know, I guess I was asking whether a sort of three-tiered sharing regime was possible for the upper portion of 6 or bottom portion of 7 or whatever, but I guess a tweak on that would be, I guess, just two-tiered access with licensed and unlicensed overlays where mobile carriers would clear the incumbent licensees to some other band, but then you would still have licensed and unlicensed overlays in that spectrum. Yeah, my question is like a two-tiered or three-tiered sharing system, whether that's possible here.
Yeah, so in terms of introducing new licensed access, we do see value in exclusive licensed use. So we haven't seen how those proposals in 3.5 have, you know, have played out yet in terms of adding that third tier as opposed to those federal incumbents that, you know, absolutely have to be protected. So we wouldn't be supportive of adding that third tier at this time. And, you know, we, as I've made clear, we do support moving forward with that lower portion of the band and think that is sufficient to meet the needs of Wi-Fi, you know, without delay. So that's where we would be at on that.
Okay.
Thank you so much. And now we have a question from Marita Coley. Marita, just unmute your phone because you're listed as a speaker and you can ask your question.
Oh, I was going to say I can defer my question and actually reach out to each of you in, because we're at 3 o'clock. But I could just tell you so you can have some time to think about it. What do you think, which approach do you think is, you know, just, you know, leveraging onto or adding onto what Clint was saying? Which of these approaches is best? In view of this pandemic with the coronavirus, I'd love to get, you know, your individual feedback. But you don't have to do that on this call. I can reach out to you after the call.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to, you know, stay true to our clock here and end the call. But before I do that, let me thank all the panelists one more time. I can say that, you know, the discussion was very engaging, very informative as well, and all of our participants would have gained valuable knowledge here. I know many of people had already made their decision on which way they are supporting. Many are still actually deciding, and if you have any further questions, feel free to reach out to us at MMTC. And we can actually connect to the right speaker or any other experts and also help you actually understand, you know, where all these bands are actually situated. And we'll get back to you all actually about, you know, definitely we haven't actually gone through all the questions we wanted to cover. C-band updates, there are quite a few there. And then, of course, 5.9 and CBR is not. I mean, those two bands have already, you know, they are progressing, but I wanted to discuss those as well. But we'll get back with more updates on that. So, again, thank you, everyone. And Doris or Marita, do we have any concluding thoughts or anything else you want to add before we drop the call?
I'd like to thank everyone for participating. And, Marcella, did you have an announcement about another upcoming event?
Yes, we do. MMTC is partnering with Alvanza and OCA, Asian Pacific American Advocates. We are having an event called Women Moving Our Country Forward, hosted, it's at the NCTA headquarters and hosted by NCTA and Charter. And we have some great guests that are lined up, Congresswoman Yvette Clark, and several speakers, including Sybil Edwards, the president and CEO of Black Female Founders, Mana Hartsock, co-founder and president of Phone to Action, and several other amazing, outstanding women. Originally, the event was scheduled for March 31st, but as of today, it is postponed until May. And we do want you to ticket in your calendars as a save the date for mid-May. It will just be a fantastic event. We're really excited about it.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, and have a great rest of the week, and stay safe and healthy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all.